Hi, welcome to Booktopia Podcast. I'm Andrew Cadenac, and joining me is John Purcell and Australia's favourite storyteller, Di Morrissey.
Hi, guys.
We're talking about rain music. The story behind this, and I guess the landscapes, it's phenomenal. I've read a bit of the book, and John's had a look. We only got it last night because, obviously, with the Di Morrissey, we do have to keep it, you know, under lock and key. We don't want to give away any secrets, but the tales of people fleeing up to far north Queensland and things like that, I mean, it's enthralling. I want to hear you talk about, the backstory for this book.
No, just go. Yeah. It's amazing. It really is. And I don't think, until you get up to places like, up Bamaga and up Cape York there, it's really, it's hard to sort of, you know, visualise. And parts of it are so different. You know, you think, the reef and that coastline. But then, you know, you go inland to, like, where the old gold diggings were. I mean, and you think they carried everything, or they took a, you know, wheelbarrow, pushed their things in a wheelbarrow, some took a, you know, horses. But it's just this rolling, it's like wave after wave after wave through these, you know, this bushland and the heat in the middle of nowhere. You think, how did they do it? And I think, you know, the whole idea of place and story just is just around you all the time. You're very confronted by history up there. You know, there's a lot of history that I think a lot of us don't really know a lot about. You know, the sugarcane fields and the Kanakas and the Chinese invasion with the gold, the first, you know, little group of Irish nuns that came out to the wilderness. Cook being stranded up there was the first place that Captain Cook, when he ran onto the reef, came ashore, was at Cooktown, or Cookstown as it was originally called. Had his first, the first sort of black and white meeting of Indigenous Australians and these visitors that promptly raised the flag and took over. And it's just, it's very all around you. So it's a place where the whole country kind of comes to life. Things come into perspective, which you don't see in a city.
One of the things, when you start the book, you meet Ned and Bella, and they're both drawn to the north for different reasons. Ned is up there, he's a musician, he's doing shows in Cairns, he's wandering about. You know, he's had an album, people know him, yeah, he's kind of well known, but not, he has never broken into the mainstream, and he's doing his shows, and he just won't, is very much his own person, and that irritates the hell out of his sister, who is a very good girl, still at home with mum, looking after her. And so she sets off to find
And she's
him.
Got a job and she's reliable. She's reliable. Owns her own apartment.
And she sets off. And when she reaches up there, immediately you've captured this feeling. And it made me want to just drop the book and go travelling. I just wanted to go up there and experience it. Because you capture this sense of these people who are outside of our life. They're in Australia, but they're in another time zone or another mental space. I don't know. Was it like that when you were there?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you go from also the amazing rainforest country, and then you get into the sugarcane country, and then you get up into the, you know, more desert country. And there's just the characters are really quite extraordinary, and as the history. And I could see how it would play into people's dreams and plans. You can feel that you can either escape and reinvent yourself, or they're dreamers that are going to hit the big time, because people have made and lost fortunes up there in all kinds of weird and wonderful enterprises, whether it's coconut plantations or peanut farms or, you know, old tourism things that have gone bust. It's really it's absolutely fascinating. So it was great grist to the mill. I think the character of Jack was someone that I came across. There's a lot of people that are just kind of don't want to mix in society anymore, that just want to drop out, who have painful histories. And so it was very rich pickings for a novelist.
It's interesting that country feel, because I'm from the country, but I'm from a part where you just grow up and all you have is really your commodity, your livestock. Whereas the further north you go, there is, on the road signs, there'll be, You can buy mangoes, you can buy puppies, you can buy peanuts. Like, it's whatever it takes to keep us there. And I guess with that desperation to stay in those parts, there is something that you've tackled, which is there could be someone running from something.
That's right. Yeah. Everyone has a secret, and people don't often give their last names. And most people haven't been there for generations. Very few, like other parts of agricultural and rural Australia, where there's been generations on a station or a property or a farm. Up there, they tend to be the country of drifters, in that people have been there, they come, they stay, they pass through, and they never go away. But there's not a sense of roots there in the sense that we know it, which is what also is rather intriguing, and you kind of wonder, you figure everybody that's up there is maybe passing through, but they all have a story. There's some history behind all of them. Why are you here? So, yeah, it's an amazing part of the country.
You describe a house, Carlo's house. Does this house exist? I want to go to this house.
It does exist. Yes, these were people that were, you know, went out to work the gold, and they've just got a lease, and they're basically fossickers with Italian parents, and they've just disappeared into this kind of, you know, jungly area on an arm of the river, and so he started building this house, and they had lots of there's a lot of old slate and stuff that was used 100 years ago in the diggings and stuff, and he started collecting the old slate and then bricks, and then his father came out to help him, and he was an Italian, like, stonemason, and they've used all of these old bricks, and they've just built a pizza oven that's like the Taj Mahal. They've built, and it's extraordinary, and they've got this amazing place which floods in the wet season, and they have to move everything, and it's extraordinary, and it was absolutely fascinating.
So that's another person who's sort of taken another road. Society was going one way, they went, no, we're going our own way.
That
place that encourages people to take their own way. Is there something, because Bella goes up there, and I get this feeling that she, even in the first moments when she's first being a little tourist around Cairns and the area, that you can see her unwinding.
The
uptightness of her existence, sort of getting the landscape and the environment she stepped into.
Puts a phone down.
And making her ask questions about what she wants. Immediately, like I've only been as far as Cairns. I now want to go further, because I understand. When I was shocked, because I had a very busy life, and I went up to Cairns, and they were so slow, and things were on a completely different time scale.
Drives Bella nuts. It's just because it's just like, where is my cappuccino? You know, and then as you do sort of see how she does change, and her eyes are open, and she slow downs. And it's a place where you start to reassess things. Your values can change. Like, what really is important in life?
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's that. I mean, and any writer who's putting together a novel like that, those questions are big questions, and you're facing them day in, day out.
And it's interesting because the brother has one attitude to life, Bella has the other, and they clash. But up there, you can step back, I think, when you're in that kind of neutral, different territory, and it's not like it is at home, that, you know, you have to take a deep breath and suddenly put yourself in the other person's shoes and can begin to understand why they're doing what they're doing, and both have to compromise. And of course, you know, there is a secret that has to come out at some stage. But I just thought it was just interesting to have two very different siblings doing their own thing, until suddenly all of this secret and this journey blows up. So that's why I decided to tell the story. It's told through the two sets of eyes. There's Bella's, you're with Bella through her eyes, and then you're with Ned seeing and feeling what he's seeing and feeling.
Well, Ned in the early part of the book, he's talking about getting away from the music scene, getting away to actually write again, because it's been a long time since he sat down and wrote. But he has bigger plans in his mind. He wants to write something bigger. Did you draw from your own experiences from having a successful career and having this other creative dream that you had to be a writer, did you draw on that to sort of create the net experience? Because taking that next level is a pretty big ask for any artist.
It is, but then if you don't kind of have ambitions, I mean, you think, oh, well, am I going to write a book that some people might like and it will just be, I'll just do it halfway? No, you have to think, you know, you have to pour everything into it. So I think a creative person has to do everything to the best of their ability. So it just, you know, it just comes that way. So you do tend to aim for other things. So for and I talk to a lot of musicians and music people to try to get in their head, because as a writer, I think one way. So I was trying to find out how musicians think, and this, and again, it's in not dissimilar to where the inspiration comes from, the same reason it does for writers. But, you know, one fellow told me, you know, he hears the music in his head, and it's like, I suppose, we writers, you know, have an idea of a story, but then to get it onto the paper, to get it out into the world requires, you know, it something gets lost in translation, and it's always very frustrating. And I think for Ned, he's naturally gifted, and he can sit on stage with a guitar and sing and entertain thousands of people. But what he really decides, it suddenly starts to come to him that what he really wants to do is to write a big show, you know, a musical, an opera, a rock opera. You know, he can't quite define it until up there the landscape and the events and the people begin to, and the history begins to give him the insight to suddenly write what Michael Cathcart on ABC Radio keeps calling the Great Australian Musical. But you know, does he or doesn't he? You know, where does he go? So, and of course, Bella, his sister, thinks that's just, you know, pipe dreams. You know, get real, get a job. You know, do what I'm doing.
Well, a lot of artists face that. I mean, how many parents have told people not to go down that. You're good at painting, but don't think you can make the life of it.
Ned's in his 30s already. I know, so yeah.
But there's still that thing where they've got these little negative voices, because you've done that. You've done the music thing. That was good. You succeeded very well. Now get on and be serious and come down to Melbourne and get a proper job and come visit the family, be there, support your family, and do all the normal things that people do. Have children, get married, get a mortgage.
Well, that sort of thing scares Ned. But then, I mean, there's a lot of adventure and some scary things that happen up there too. And I think Ned thinks about, as does Bella, during a rather scary part of the book for Bella, that the Australian landscape, it's different now. That you used to feel that you could just pull up and put a layer of swag down and sleep anywhere in the open air and you'd be safe. But after seeing Wolf Creek and the tragic murders and kidnappings and things, you know, so there's a sinister element always out there. There's this amazing Black Mountain out of Cooktown, which is all great huge granite boulders that are kind of flung together unevenly, so there's tiny holes. And nothing grows on it. And the stories about that go back to the early 1800s of people going in and never coming out. It's like Hanging Rock, and that it moans and groans, and you can hear some people, it's the way to the inner earth, and they've got aliens. And the stories about it, even where cattle rustling, a 1,000 head of cattle went in, police went in after them, and none of them ever came out. It's amazing, and you kind of drive past that and you go, I am not stepping foot on that mountain.
Well, even before Wolf Creek, when I was a kid, just stepping into, we used to play cricket in this field up in the Blue Mountains, and the ball would go into the bush, and you walk 4 metres into the bush and suddenly you're in the bush.
Yes.
And you're freaking out.
There's
an eeriness to Australia.
It closes around you, and that's how you can get lost. It all looks the same. Very easy to get lost in the wild scrub.
It's nice that you've come out with a novel this year, because it's only a part-time thing now that you've set up your own newspaper. What is going on there?
Oh, as if I didn't have very, I had nothing. No, I didn't have enough in my going on in my life. I got the local newspapers. I just think, as an ex-journalist, I'm a bit frustrated looking at what's happening with some of our media. I think the standard of some of our newspapers and journalism has sunk somewhat, only because they can't. There's not the staff, and the fortunes and the rivers of gold are disappearing. But in the Manning Valley where I live, we have two local papers, but they cover, pro council, and they cover the local news. But there was nothing like to really read. And when you meet people and you think, what an amazing story this person has. And also, I'm pushing to get regional development and to help where with the problems that beset all of us, from coal seam gas and fracking to all more manner of kids with unemployment and stuff. So I thought, well, I would start a monthly newspaper to kind of cover all of these stories that aren't being covered. And I just felt that it was, it would be something that might be helpful in bringing the community together. So I just started, it's really a one woman show. I have a couple of friends that help me out occasionally, I give it away, and we've got a circulation of about 6,000. My ironing lady runs around in her bubble car and delivers it to all the papers, to all the shops and cafes and businesses in quite a broad area now. And the feedback's now, I'm actually getting people buying ads. So, it's still an expensive exercise, but I think it's been very good in bringing a lot of the community to get together, and bringing things out into the open and trying to get fresh thinking about things we can do, and why don't we try and do this, and so it's very fulfilling. Yeah, I love it.
It's proving that, because there's the sort of doom and gloom about the centralisation of local newspapers and farming out stories from other areas into that to fill up the pages. And the theory was, in my mind, was if that happens and there's no satisfaction within the readership, then others will start, and yours is one of those. It's actually filling a gap that has been created by mismanagement. These things haven't gone away. The need for information hasn't gone away. The need for personal stories hasn't gone away.
That's true. I've discovered that there's a mass of small community newspapers around the country, and even in areas like Lane Cove in Sydney and stuff. So there is a need for that, for the behind the news, also to hear some good news, things that people are doing, and other ideas, and in-depth long articles that so it's not just the daily papers can cover that, whereas I have this deeper look into things that sort of concern us. But because the paper's online, www.manningcommunitynews.com.
I was going to ask you to do a plug.
I'm getting feedback from all over the country. So, I don't know how long I can manage to keep it going. But anyway, we'll see.
And one last thing, because you let slip a little earlier that Booktopia's own Caroline Baum has been nudging you for a memoir. She's been examining your life in a few interviews and has come to you going, this has to be put down from your perspective. When can we have your memoir?
I have no time. I'm also dabbling with film and television projects. I'm planning my next novel for next year. I'm doing my newspaper. I have my grandchildren coming to visit, and I have two children's books. I have my Everton's, and Everton and Will comes out at Christmas, and I've got two more. I'm doing a book for each of the grandchildren, so I've got four grandchildren. So there's another two books standing in the wings. So
I'm exhausted just hearing
and
about
I
that
cook. And I cook.
We've heard about your cooking. It's incredible. Well, look, thank you so much, Di. It's the time that we can get from you is appreciated.
Lovely.
Because you are the busiest person in Australia.
Oh, thank
you're doing
you,
so
Andrew.
Many good things for the country. And Rain Music, I think you're on a big Queensland tour as well, by the way. So
yes.
A lot of people up in the far north will appreciate it, just like all the readers out there. So thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you, Andrew. Thank
and you can get,
much.
For everyone at home, you can get Rain Music from Booktopia at www.booktopia.com.au.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.